Global South Pole, a program presented to you by Sputnik Africa. Welcome to Global South Pole Podcast, where we delve deep into the issues shaping the Global South. In today's episode, we confront a topic that is deeply rooted in history while having a significant impact on the present day: slavery reparations. But before we proceed with our discussion for today's news, newly elected Senegalese President Bassirou Diomaye Faye has ordered the nation's Prime Minister Ousmane Sonko to carry out audits on the of the country's oil, gas, and mining sectors. This was done in order to draw up an action plan with a clear schedule for achieving the set objectives. The decision was taken at the first cabinet meeting of the new government, which was approved by Diomaye on Saturday. Rwandan President Paul Kagame said that he is concerned about the US failure to characterize the 1994 massacre as genocide against the Tutsi minority. His comments came after the US Secretary of State Antony Blinken did not specify in his message that the Tutsi ethnic group was the target of the genocide. In his statement, the president stressed that Rwandans will never understand why any country will remain intentionally vague about who was the target in the genocide, adding that such ambiguity is, in fact, a form of denial, which is a crime itself, and Rwanda will always challenge it. On Sunday, the East African country began a week of national mourning and 100 days of commemoration to mark the 30th anniversary of the 1994 genocide against the Tutsi, one of the bloodiest events of the 20th century. Zimbabwe's president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, has refuted claims that he will seek a third term while answering questions during an interview with the local Brick by Brick magazine. Mnangagwa went on to say that ZANU-PF, the ruling party of Zimbabwe, are very democratic and obey the constitution. The incumbent president underlined the absence of any evidence that himself or ZANU-PF ever expressed the violation of the Zimbabwean constitution. Russia has raised the issue of attacks by Kiev regime against the Zaporizhzhia nuclear plant both at the International Atomic Energy Agency and in the United Nations Security Council. This comes as Ukraine launched attacks on the territory of the facility following an inspection by experts of the International Atomic Energy Agency. Russian President Vladimir Putin will pay a state visit to China this year. This was made known during the visit of Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov to Beijing, where he held talks with his counterpart Wang Yi to address issues related to sanctions within the frameworks of BRICS and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Lavrov highlighted the economic challenges posed by unilateral sanctions and stressed the importance of cooperation in resolving them. Attention listeners, you are tuned in to Global South Pole. For those of you just joining us, welcome aboard. Today we are excited to have with us on Global South Pole, Mr. Eric McLaren Phillips. Africa, the Caribbean, and the rest of the countries of the Global South have been plagued by the tragic legacy of colonialism and slavery for many years. Millions of lives were stolen, cultures were plundered, and entire economies were built upon the backs of the enslaved. Despite the abolition of slavery, the legacy of exploitation continues to hamper development in these regions. A strong reparations movement is currently gathering steam. Nations in Africa and the Caribbean are banding together to seek answers from the Western countries that benefited from the slave trade. Mr. Phillips, a prominent figure in the reparations movement, will give us his insights about the urgent necessity of recognition, responsibility, and compensation for these actions. Thank you very much for being with us Can you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Well, my name is Eric McLaren Phillips. I am a Guyanese-American citizen living in Guyana. I am the chairperson of the Guyana Reparations Committee appointed by the President of Guyana, and I am an elected vice chair of the CARICOM Reparations Commission. I lived in the States for about 10 years. I lived in South Africa for 7.5 years and in Europe and 6 other countries.
So, Mr. Phillips, can you explain to our listeners what CARICOM is?
Well, CARICOM comprises 15 countries in the Caribbean. It's like the European Union. It's sort of similar. And the goal there, of course, is to have a regional bloc to negotiate. So currently, within reparations, we have a CARICOM Reparations Commission, which reports to a prime ministerial subcommittee on reparations that's chaired by Prime Minister Mia Motley. The CARICOM Reparations Commission is comprised of the heads of 15 national reparations committees, of which I chair Guyana. And the chair of that committee is Sir Hilary Beckles. I am one of the vice chairs.
Thank you for your response. So currently, there is a growing support among the African and Caribbean nations for the establishment of an international tribunal for atrocities committed during the slave trade. So can you tell us what this initiative is about and how it started?
Well, last year, we were in Barbados meeting with jurists from Africa and the Africa Union. This is the CARICOM Reparations Commission. And it was an exploratory meeting to see how the groups could come together to pursue reparatory justice. Out of that meeting, which was attended by Vice President Marquez of Colombia also, there was a decision to host a conference in Accra, Ghana in November under the auspices of the President of Ghana. In Ghana, there was a 4-day meeting, and one of the things discussed there was the formation of an African legal team to look into different options to pursue reparatory justice. And out of that came one of the options was the idea of a tribunal similar to the Nuremberg Tribunal. Now, what's important there is that we found that most European countries have ring-fenced their legal systems. So, for example, in the UK, you can't bring any case for crimes and colonial crimes before a certain year. And as you look at Holland and Germany and France, all of these countries have ring-fenced themselves so that it leaves us very little options to pursue the crimes against humanity domestically. So as you look at the Jewish Holocaust and the tribunal, the Nuremberg Tribunal, the idea was to pursue something similar to that, because then you would have a chance to circumvent all of these local barriers to justice. So that's how it came about. There was a discussion, long discussion about it. Now, we must remember that the idea of a tribunal isn't new, because in 1982, in November in Brooklyn, there was a group, African People's Socialist Party, had brought up the idea, a gentleman by the name of Omali Yesutila. And there was a trial of the United States, and the United States was found guilty. There were judges from Barbados, Senegal, and Zaire at the time, and they were found guilty for crimes against humanity and genocide, and the charge, the payment, was $4.1 trillion. So the idea of a tribunal goes back to the Nuremberg trials, but there was also that discussion in Brooklyn in 1982, prior to the Durban Conference, which, of course, you know, came out with the result that slavery was a crime against humanity. So there's a history to this. And all we're doing is really looking at options to see how we can address this justice, because European nations, as much as they're apologizing, like the Dutch did, they are unwilling to pay reparatory justice.
From what you mentioned, the proposal is based on the tribunals such as the Nuremberg trials of the Nazi World War criminals after the Second World War. Why are the atrocities of the transatlantic slave trade require a similar tribunal?
Because it is very difficult, as I mentioned, to pursue it otherwise. We can go to the International Court of Justice, and you see currently there's an issue with Israel and Gaza, and even today in Nicaragua and Germany. There has to be some international process, because this was an international crime. And this international crime lasted over 400 years and, of course, continued with colonialism and neocolonialism and all of these types of things. So absent that, you would have to pursue crimes against humanity individually against France, against Holland, against all the other European nations that are involved in the slave trade, Spain, Portugal, etc. And that's burdensome because as you pursue it, you'll realize that the Emancipation Acts in Brazil, in the United States, in the British colonies are all different. And they're all subjected to different types of colonial laws. The British law is different than German, than French, than Spanish, than Portuguese. But since this is an international crime, we have to address it. Now, there's always this big issue of the intemporal principle, which basically says that you need to address a crime in the time it occurred. And if slavery wasn't a crime against humanity when it occurred, then there's an issue. But there is no time limit against crimes against humanity. So bottom line is we need to find a mechanism, a platform that circumvents all these local barriers to justice. And I think a tribunal is one of those options. In November in Accra, Ghana, we had a conference between the Africa Union and CARICOM, as well as groups from the United States and Latin America. This is one of the things discussed.
I see. Presently, what is the status of this initiative? How is it going, and what are the main challenges in the establishment of this tribunal?
Well, we're expecting a group of lawyers from Africa and the Caribbean to meet to look at options. And as that group meets and prioritizes options, makes the most sense, depending on the environment, depending on the jurisdiction, then we will pursue each of those. But the tribunal is an important one because we can use the United Nations, United Nations Security Council, United Nations General Assembly to establish such a tribunal. And I think as we pursue it and as we evaluate it and as we have our lawyers look at it, there's going to be more progress. 3 years ago, September 7th, Africa and the Caribbean heads of states met for the first time. And every year in September, these heads of states meet. And so we are looking to develop information for them so that when that next meeting occurs, there'll be some discussion on how to pursue reparatory justice, the relationship and the strength of the platform with Africa, the Caribbean, the diaspora, Latin America coming together on the one unified platform to pursue this. Because so far, reparatory justice activities have been isolated. I mean, the Dutch, they've apologized, but they don't want to pay reparations. And it's a game being played to see how the apology pans out. As you know, CARICOM has a 10-point plan, and the first point is a full formal apology. Now, countries don't want to apologize because that gives them liability, legal liability. So you see the British, the King, for example, they offer regret. So they don't want to apologize. But even when the Dutchies apologize, they're playing games about what it is they want to do. And whilst the Dutch have apologized, they still have colonies in Aruba, Bonaire, Curacao, St. Barts. So how can you apologize and want to pursue reparatory justice when one of those issues is non-repetition? Now, if there's non-repetition, you can't apologize and still have colonies. So these are the types of complicated issues we need to address because the Dutch courts are different than the British courts and the French courts and the Portuguese courts. And we need to reconcile these into an international court platform that deals with the international crime.
Thank you for this detailed explanation. What are the consequences of not creating a tribunal for the atrocities of the transatlantic slave trade? What could happen?
Well, the consequences are dire. First, there will be significant delays because you have to address each colonial power differently. In Guyana, we had the Dutch and for over 200 years, and then we had the British. In some other countries, you have the French. So we would have to then individually, from a Guyanese point of view, have two different courts or two different efforts, one against the British and one against the French. And even though we have the Brattle Report, which does an evaluation of what it was they are owing us, it would be tenuous. Then you'd have Jamaica, then you'd have Trinidad, then you'd have Barbados. Each country would have to do that. And again, the evidence is the evidence. It's the same evidence. The Durban Conference, which was under the United Nations, brings together a lot of information and indeed determined it to be a crime against humanity. So absent an international tribunal, you'll have to go through an awful lot of delays, an awful lot of legal barriers. As I mentioned earlier, the British have ring-fenced their legal system. So in case of the Mau Mau, there was a settlement. If you look at Germany, Germany, of course, provided reparations to the Jewish Holocaust. But their current situation in Namibia, where 100,000 Herero and Namo people were killed in a genocide, they've acknowledged the genocide, but what they've offered is £1 billion or $1 billion over 30 years for development projects without acknowledging legally that it was genocide, although they accept it was genocide. So absent an international tribunal, absent an architecture that brings things on a level platform, you'll have all these games by Germany and France and Holland where they're trying to apologize but not apologize. It's the same in the United States where, you know, you have this whole issue of critical race theory where some states like Florida don't want history to be taught because they do not want their young people or even their adult population to know the crimes that really occurred. And that becomes a barrier. Because if you go to the United States and say you should pay reparations for slavery, most young people, most adults don't know what the crime was. So this critical race theory strategy is to prevent it. Similarly in Holland, similarly in England, even in the Caribbean, we don't teach history because of the shame associated with the crimes against humanity. And so Europeans love to say that we are children of slaves. But we don't say that you are children of murderers. And that's because we're more diplomatic. So there are a lot of issues associated with why an international tribunal needs to be the platform versus going against Holland and Germany and United States and England and France and Portugal.
Why is it important for African and Caribbean nations to obtain reparations? And why should people support these initiatives?
A few years ago, one of our prime ministers, Owen Arthur, he's since died, mentioned that without reparations, Caribbean civilization is at risk. We're at risk of climate change. We have tremendous climate change issues. We're at risk of serious health issues. Barbados is the amputation capital of the world because of diabetes. These are all legacies of slavery. So it's important for CARICOM and these small nation states. CARICOM is less than 14 million people. Look at Haiti. Haiti had to pay reparations to France. And look at the state that Haiti is in right now because of foreign intervention by both the U.S. And France. So without reparatory justice in the Caribbean, you have a very difficult future. And knowing, of course, that most of the extraction out of the Caribbean made Europe wealthy. Now, we need Africa to be part of this because they too suffer. As much as they claim that there are 15 million people that were taken from Africa, in 1650, Africa and Europe had the same population, which was 100 million people. By 1850, Africa's population shrunk from 100 million to 95, whereas Europe's population grew from 100 million to 265 million. So had it not been for slavery, Africa would have had a lot more population. Its economic systems would not have been destroyed. I love to say that slavery was the first nuclear bomb that impacted Africa, and racism was the second nuclear bomb, because that's the impact today. So we need Africa and the Caribbean to come together in a unified manner, because the crime scene is both Africa and the Caribbean, and the third parties are Europe. So we need to bring all of those together in the same courtroom, under the same legal framework to address this, because economic sustainability in Africa has been significantly hampered, and in the Caribbean, it has been definitely hampered when you look at issues of climate change and other things that are threatening the Caribbean right now. And you look at the tremendous poverty and underdevelopment in most African countries and in the Caribbean, because part of the policy of slavery and colonialism was on the development of the countries which they extracted wealth from.
How could you characterize the overall impact neocolonialism has today?
Well, it's been from one form of oppression to the next. You had indigenous genocide, followed by African enslavement, followed by indentureship, followed by colonialism. Well, colonialism was all part of it, and neocolonialism. If you look at the debt structures all over these countries that are enslaved, you see a pattern of capitalism destroying economies, destroying lives, making it uneven. If you look at Guyana today, we have huge quantities of oil, but you look at the contract, it's an odious contract where Guyana gets 12 and a half cents or 14 and a half cents a dollar, whereas for the same oil, Saudi Arabia gets 70 cents. So the colonialism, the imperialism, the rampant capitalism is still a legacy of slavery and indentureship and colonialism and continues today. So we need to address the whole issue of slavery through reparatory justice so that the countries that are exploited have an opportunity to develop themselves in their own ways, not similar to Europe, because development means different things to different countries and different things to different cultures. The Chinese develop different, the Americans and the Europeans develop different, Africans develop different because development is cultural also. So we need to pursue this because the legacies of slavery and capitalism and colonialism is impacting us today, and we need to address those.
Exactly. I hope indeed that Caribbean and African nations will be able to obtain sovereignty and full independence.
You need economic independence or interdependence. In a good sense for all of us to grow. But you're not free economically because of the Bretton Woods rules and all of the global things that entrap developing countries.
I quite agree with you on that. Relationship between countries should be mutually beneficial. So that will be all for today. Mr. Phillips, thank you very much for your time and insight. You are welcome to share your final statement with our listeners if you have any.
Yeah, I'm now getting ready to go to Geneva. I'm hoping to develop an economic framework of inclusion, because in most of the countries where there was slavery and indigenous genocide, indigenous people and people of African descent have been excluded from these economies. So that's what I'm working on. And I'm very thankful for this interview and look forward to working with you in a collaborative way in the future.
As we conclude this episode of Global South Pole, Mr. Eric McLaren Phillips has provided us with invaluable insights into the complex and deeply entrenched issues surrounding slavery reparation. From the historic injustices of colonialism and slavery to the enduring legacies of exploitation and inequality, our discussion has shed light on the urgent need for accountability and restitution. The proposal for an African legal team and the idea of a tribunal similar to the Nuremberg trials offer potential avenues for pursuing justice on an international scale. However, as Mr. Phillips explains, the reluctance of Western nations to acknowledge their responsibility and offer meaningful reparations remains an obstacle. It is clear that there are structural obstacles to justice, from the intertemporal principle to the purposeful erasing of history through strategies like the critical race theory. The legacy of slavery is not just about the past. It shapes Africa's and the Caribbean's present reality, from climate change vulnerabilities to health crises. The impact is undeniable. The demographic shift Mr. Phillips emphasized, where Africa's population significantly decreased while that of Europe grew due to slavery, explains the situation. He described slavery as the first nuclear bomb that devastated Africa, followed by the ongoing effects of racism. The unified voice of countries of the Global South in the struggle for reparations demonstrates the power of collective action and the relentless pursuit of restorative justice. As we move further, it is incumbent upon the international community to heed this call and take meaningful steps towards acknowledging the past, making amends, and paving the way for a more equitable and just future. As we wrap up this insightful episode, I invite you to stay tuned for our special segment, the quote of the episode by Thabo Mbeki. Thabo Mbeki, a political leader of profound intellect and unwavering commitment, epitomizes the essence of leadership and vision. As the former president of South Africa, his tenure was marked by a dedication promoting economic growth and advocating for African unity on the global stage. Mbeki's diplomatic finesse played an important role in shaping South Africa's transition to democracy and its subsequent development. His profound insights into African issues and his strong belief in the continent's potential continue to inspire generations, cementing his legacy as a beacon of hope and progress for Africa and the world.
I am born of a people who would not tolerate oppression. I am of a nation that would not allow that fear of death, of torture, of imprisonment, of exile, or persecution should result in the perpetuation of injustice. The great masses who are our mother and father will not permit that the behavior of the few results in the description of our country and people as barbaric.
Thank you for tuning in to Global South Pole. Do not forget to subscribe to our Telegram channel at Sputnik Africa. And you can listen to all episodes of Global South Pole on our website. Until next time, goodbye.